We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Tuesday, November 19th, and we are only a couple of weeks past the 2024 presidential election. But already there is just so much that is going on that, you know, the mainstream media doesn't want to allow President Trump to be Trump. And so one of the biggest things going on is this controversy over recess appointments and whether or not Trump can actually put in the people that he wants to put in. And so, of course, if this were the Democrats, they would find procedures and ways to manipulate or even circumvent the law and the Constitution to get what they prefer. And yet, we have to hold Donald Trump, of course, not just to the letter of the law, but to the spirit of the law. And the Democrats are putting on, you know, their wigs and their tricorn hats now and evoking the spirit of the founding fathers to say that this is not at all what the Constitution means, even though recess appointments by president, and it's important to remember this, recess appointments even recently were Barack Obama 32, George W. Bush 171, Bill Clinton 139, and George H.W. Bush 77. And yes, those were not manufactured Senate recesses, but the Constitution does not actually textually forbid that. And so if he's not going to get a Senate that's going to play ball, then, you know, maybe this is a way that he can at least temporarily appoint some of his cabinet members. But let's, on all this and more, let's bring on Representative Bob Good, who is from the great state of Virginia. And Representative Good, what is your thought here on the idea of recess appointments? I mean, to me, it's like, well, obviously, the intent of the Constitution is for actual vacancies when the Senate is on a recess that isn't just this manufactured. There's nothing in the Constitution that specifies otherwise. And I'm personally tired of Republicans trying to adhere to this spirit of the law instead of just using law and process to actually move the ball forward.
Great to be with you, Jenna. Thanks for having me. I would hope that the new Republican Senate with 53 members would confirm President Trump's picks, President Trump's nominees. We would not have a Senate majority without the overwhelming win by President Trump, winning all the battleground states. And President Trump tried the conventional, traditional type picks 8 years ago, and it obviously served him poorly in many cases. And Washington needs to be disrupted. It needs to be reconfigured in many ways. We need to bring high-velocity culture change to Washington. And what better people to do that than some of these nominees that President Trump has put forth, including my friend Matt Gaetz for Attorney General. Matt and I are close colleagues and have served together and fought the same fights over these past 4 years that I've been in Washington. And so I think the Republicans should use every tool at their disposal, every tool that's within their legitimate means to advance the agenda that the American people voted for overwhelmingly, with retaining the House majority, obviously winning the popular vote for President Trump, again, winning the Senate. And so I think the Republicans need to fight fire with fire and realize that we are at war to save our country, that the Democrats will do everything they can to destroy President Trump, to destroy his nominees, to destroy his agenda, and we need to fight accordingly.
I couldn't agree more. And to use every tool that is within their legitimate means, I think that was perfectly stated, Representative Bob Good, because, of course, you know, we're not asking Trump, or we're not advocating for anyone to go outside of the margins of the law and the Constitution. But when you say, well, you know, this rule isn't working exactly the way that it was intended, and having the fear of the mainstream media, I mean, that was really what handicapped Trump's first term, was because the left were holding him to this standard that they didn't hold anybody else to, and they didn't allow him to actually use some of the legitimate tools at his disposal, and really the Republicans didn't allow that as well, and so we saw that there wasn't as much work that actually got done because of that. But you mentioned Matt Gaetz. Of course, he has risen to be the most controversial, I think, of Trump's nominees, and you know, for the left again to claim that somehow he's not qualified, I think that's just totally laughable. When there were Biden nominees that were, you know, men wearing dresses and identifying as pronouns that don't match with reality, and somehow, you know, these people who were clearly diversity hires, but, you know, those people sailed through, and far be it from the leftist media to comment and to somehow ever suggest that they weren't qualified. I mean, I hope that Donald Trump doesn't back off from some of these picks just because of the leftist outrage. I mean, even Pete Hegseth with some of these things that, okay, it's an accusation, but we saw the same thing during Kavanaugh's confirmation. So, this, it's just ridiculous. Go ahead.
Indeed it is. Matt Gaetz was chosen by the president based on merit. Matt Gaetz is one of the most talented, most intelligent, most courageous, most competent members of Congress. He's been a tremendous performer on the House Judiciary Committee. He's obviously is an attorney, and he's qualified. He's qualified based on his experience and his background on judiciary. He's also qualified based on President Trump selecting and choosing him. And we've got this Department of Injustice under Merrick Garland. It's interesting that some Republicans who are expressing concern about voting for Matt Gaetz voted for Merrick Garland to give us Merrick Garland, the worst attorney general, certainly in the last 50 plus years, certainly in my lifetime, who has weaponized his department against its citizens. What worse can you do in the government than to weaponize the Department of Justice against your political opponents, you know, to raid homes in the wee hours of the morning with 30 agents in tactical gear and drag out women and children in their pajamas, and to go after people practicing their faith or protesting at abortion clinics, or parents showing up at school board meetings, targeting people based on their political views, their political opponents being at the mercy of this weaponized DOJ. And so we need someone who will clean house, who will reform, who will change that department, and who has the courage and the intelligence and the capacity to do it. And Matt Gaetz is a great choice to that effect. And, you know, Pete Hegseth, obviously not a traditional choice to lead the Department of Defense. But I think we need change when they failed their seventh consecutive audit and they can't account for $800 billion in assets. They failed us in Afghanistan. They focused on the wrong things and weakened our military. I think we need change, and someone like Pete Hegseth may be just what we need.
And I think that's the mandate from the American people in this last election. And you know, and speaking of a weaponized government, I mean, you're absolutely right that the DOJ has been weaponized against conservatives. But it's almost every federal branch of government under Biden and Harris, including FEMA. And so today, House Republicans are going to have a hearing. The House Oversight Committee will hold a hearing over the accusations that FEMA aid was politicized and that they passed over and were directed to pass over homes in the wake of Hurricane Helene and Milton. These homes that had Trump signage in their yard for what? For fear that somehow, you know, these people weren't going to talk kindly to FEMA aid workers. I mean, it's utterly ridiculous. But what do you expect from this House Oversight Committee hearing today?
Well, to your point, it's not just the Department of Injustice. Obviously, like you said, it's all the federal departments and agencies under the Biden-Harris administration. I mean, their collusion with big tech to suppress information and to cancel dissenting views. They went to court to retain that so-called right to do that. And then FEMA, they're not even pretending. They're not even hiding it. They're admitting they skipped over homes if you had a Trump sign. So people at their worst, lowest moments, in their greatest need, and we got this federal agency that our tax dollars are funding, and they're selectively choosing or not choosing people based on their political views as expressed by maybe a sign or a flag. And this Marnie Washington, the person, at least the middle manager responsible for the execution of this, she obviously didn't do it in a vacuum. She wasn't afraid of doing this. She wasn't afraid of going on national TV and saying she did this. They treated Trump supporters like people that had vicious dogs ready to attack anyone who stepped on their property. So I look forward to the oversight hearing today. We've got a lot of great, capable members on that committee who I'm sure will shed great light on what our own federal government is doing to its citizens under the Biden-Harris regime.
And so with this oversight committee hearing, this is more or less fact-finding today. What can be the result of some of the things that are discovered out of this hearing and further investigation?
Well, thankfully, hope is on the way, this is just further illustrating the change that is needed in Washington, why we need to make to increase the number of federal employees who are fireable once you have a change in administration. Right now, only some 4,000 out of 4 million federal employees change with the administration. So this is evidence of you've got this underlying layers of management and staff that will resist the president's agenda, will try to keep him from doing what the American people elected him to do. This is why we need to require all federal workers to come back to work, 80% of them. You know, I chaired the subcommittee on labor and employment in the Education Workforce Committee, and 80% of federal workers haven't come back to work since COVID. They don't come to work every day. They don't show up in person. First step is make them all come back to work. Secondly, transfer them around the country where they don't want to go, make them leave D.C., and then turn loose the DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency under Ramaswamy and Elon Musk to make the changes that need to be made. We've got to show courage. This is unsustainable, as we're seeing from FEMA today.
I'm speaking with Representative Bob Good from the great state of Virginia. And, you know, you mentioned DOGE, and this is one of the departments now, and this new idea, new creation with Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy that I think is really innovative, very exciting, and much needed in terms of change. There, of course, has been a lot of pushback on this, that this will just be a ton of recommendations and really no implementation. I hope that that's not accurate, but what do you see in the short term that can really be accomplished from this type of agency when they see all of the inefficiencies of government and look at things like, for example, actually closing the Department of Education? I mean, something that Trump had promised from his first term.
Yes. Again, serving on the Education Committee for 4 years, we absolutely need to do that. Close the Department of Education. I hope President Trump will follow through. And your concern is valid because Republicans all too often have shown, almost always, I should say, a failure in courage, a lack of courage, a lack of resolve. Because anytime you want to eliminate a job, anytime you want to cut a program, anytime you want to cut spending, it impacts somebody. And you have to be willing to withstand the criticisms and the attacks from the media and from the Democrats and from the left and so forth to implement the president's immigration agenda and his border agenda under Tom Homan and so many others. But think about Elon Musk. He fired 80% of Twitter X employees, undoubtedly because they had gotten, you know, soft and large and had overhired and overstaffed, but also I'm sure because some didn't support his agenda when he wanted to bring the changes that were necessary at Twitter X. So the federal government, how much more do we need to bring that kind of accountability and to reduce staff? We ought to eliminate federal unions, government unions. We ought not to be able to unionize against the interests of the American people. But you're right. We've got to have the stomach and the courage and the wherewithal to follow through. I think that's where Ramaswamy and Musk can help because they're not elected and they're not afraid of their next election like most Republicans and most members of Congress are. But the American people are going to demand that we do what we said we would do when the American people trust the Republicans with the majority again.
Absolutely. And I see this, the next 4 years, as kind of the last really great attempt and an opportunity that we have to bring America back from the brink of all of the cultural Marxism, all of the outrageous spending. I mean, whether it's economic, it's border, it's social issues. I mean, any of this that has gotten so out of control and so off the mark, this is really the last opportunity that we have over the next 4 years to do that. And if Republicans actually have the will, and I think that's really the biggest key, do they have the spine to actually get this done? I think that Donald Trump does. I think Elon Musk does. But will the rest of the elected Republicans have the courage? So we'll look forward to seeing that. But Representative Bob Good, always appreciate you dropping by. You can follow him at Rep. Bob Good on X. And we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Well, Joe Biden has about 2 months left in office and is now helping escalate the conflict between Ukraine and Russia. And this breaking just moments before we got on air this morning, Ukraine fires the first barrage of U.S.-made long-range missiles into Russia, the Kremlin says. This is after President Biden gave Ukraine permission to use the weapons on Russian soil. So Russia said it shot down five of the missiles and damaged the sixth. It added that debris landed in the area of a Russian military facility and reported no casualties or damage beyond a small fire. That coming from Fox News. Also coming from Fox News early yesterday is that Putin signed a revised doctrine lowering the threshold for nuclear response if Russia is attacked. Of course, now they have been attacked, and the Kremlin said the revision was published, quote, in a timely manner when asked if it was in response to Biden authorizing Ukraine to use the U.S. long-range missiles in Russia. So joining me now is our good friend Orrin McIntyre, who is a host and commentator at The Blaze. And Orrin, it seems like Biden is trying, you know, it's his parting gift to America and the world to start World War III.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where it's very clear that the incoming Trump administration is going to have a obviously different approach to this. Trump has already committed himself to attempting to end this conflict before he even enters office. I don't know if that's going to happen, but it's very clear that he is looking for a compromise. He is looking to pursue peace as soon as he enters. And it's very clear from what is happening in Ukraine right now that really this war only exists because the United States is fighting as a proxy war. We are functionally at war with Russia. The Ukraine would not be continuing its efforts. It certainly would not be firing missiles into Russia without our assistance. And so this war is only being artificially extended because the United States thinks it's good foreign policy to fight to the last Ukrainian. The American people have made it clear that they do not want this war. That is one of the main reasons they have chosen Donald Trump, is his commitment to peace through strength, but also recognizing that America is not a world empire that is involved in every conflict across the globe. And yet the Biden administration says, nope, our last act in office will be to push us as close to war as possible.
And I think you're absolutely right that one of the biggest reasons and part of this whole central mandate to not waste all of the resources in government and not have all of this excess spending includes all of the taxpayer funding that has gone to Ukraine from the United States. And so, you know, obviously Trump will have a different approach here. And so do you read Biden allowing this as trying to help escalate this to an unmanageable and untenable fever pitch to give Trump almost, at least in the Democrats' view, no good way through diplomatic channels to end this conflict?
Oh, absolutely. And we know for certain that there's still a significant part of the Republican Party that wants to continue this war, that wants to continue to fund this just in perpetuity. And this is absolutely insane. The United States is in desperate need of border security and infrastructure and the ability for people to afford homes and all kinds of important things here on the domestic front. If the United States Army and the funding for our military should be doing anything, it's making sure ensure that we enable mass deportations and ensure that no one else crosses into our border. It would be nice if both Democrats and Republicans cared as much about the territorial integrity of this country as they did of Ukraine. Now, that doesn't mean that Vladimir Putin is a good guy. He's obviously a very bad guy. But it's simply not our job to constantly run around and put out every fire across the world. And the fact that it's become so normal for the United States to do this bleed into every conflict where we fund and we get all the different groups together and we give them arms and aid, no matter how questionable they might be, given the Azov battalion and other forces inside Ukraine, sometimes the answer is just everybody's a bad guy. And maybe you shouldn't be running around handing weapons to bad guys on a consistent basis. But the Democratic Party is now accepted that they are the party of the neocons. You know, the bulwark crowd were crying when Kamala Harris lost. They were rooting for her throughout this entire contest. So now the left is the side of perpetual global war, and Donald Trump is trying to do his best to pull us back to a sensible but strong foreign policy, and they are doing everything they can to block that.
So how important or significant is this that Putin signed this new policy on just happens to be the 1,000th day of the war with Ukraine? And this doctrine is also stating that Russia could respond to the aggression with nuclear weapons. I mean, this seems like a really sharp escalation. What is this in practical terms?
Well, it's obviously, you know, the possibility of this does ramp up when you are firing missiles. I mean, let's just not play games here. The United States is effectively firing missiles in the direction of the Russian capital. That is absolutely what is happening here, which is just an insane thing to say, but it is absolutely correct. Now, again, that doesn't mean Putin's the good guy here, but it is obvious that Joe Biden is playing a reckless game with the United States. And let's be clear, Joe Biden isn't doing anything. He's wandering into the jungle. He doesn't know what he's doing. But, you know, Tony Blinken or whoever's actually operating the Biden administration is interested in doing this. And so you end up at the scenario where I don't think Vladimir Putin is foolish enough to take this bait just 2 months before a person who's going to be more rational and more willing to create a peace enters into the White House. But it is, of course, still stupid. Like, you don't want to push world leaders with nuclear weapons to the edge of using them, even if you think, oh, well, there's no way they'll be foolish enough to engage in this.
It's really scary. And of course, we still have 2 months left before Donald Trump's inauguration. And so there's a lot of time here. What can, you know, if anything, Congress do to perhaps help some of this along when, you know, we don't have Donald Trump yet? I mean, it seems like 2 months is a little bit too long for comfort.
Well, you know, if we had a real constitutional government, which we absolutely do not, then wars would have to be funded through the Congress. They would have to be declared formally, through the actual congressional process. But of course, we haven't done that since World War II. We've completely abandoned constitutional governance when it comes to war in the United States. And unfortunately, both left and right seem very comfortable with embracing War Powers Act operation and simply abandoning the Constitution in its totality when it comes to the foreign policy. And so, unfortunately, in many ways, Congress has already ceded their authority to this. On top of that, again, Donald Trump has the problem that many Republicans are still very pro the war in Ukraine, not necessarily because I think they care about the geopolitical implications, but again, I think they're just heavily funded by the military-industrial complex, by the perpetual war lobby. And so they want to continue this. They think that this is good investment because Americans aren't dying. But of course, as we see here, just because you throw some other country's soldiers in front of Russian bullets doesn't mean you aren't playing fast and loose with the security of the United States as well. And so this is just a terrible way to do policy. There's a reason these checks and balances were built into the Constitution, and the fact that both parties have been entirely willing to abandon those checks and balances puts us exactly in the position those checks and balances were meant to avoid.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love what you said, Orrin McIntyre, my special guest this morning, host and writer at The Blaze, saying, you know, it's not like we are acting as if we are in a constitutional republic with Congress basically just ceding all of their responsibilities. And this was something I spoke with Representative Bob Good in the last segment about this whole idea of recess appointments. I mean, my timeline on X right now is filled with, you know, some of these, you know, very do-gooder sort of protesters going, well, this wasn't the original intent of the Constitution. And I'm thinking, how many times do the Democrats actually adhere faithfully to that and say, you know, well, this is only the original intent can ever be how this particular provision can ever be used. I mean, I can think of like 17 recent examples where that isn't true. I mean, one of the top ones, of course, that comes to mind is the two impeachments of Donald Trump in recent history. I mean, it's just preposterous to say we need to hold Republicans to the spirit of the law, but Democrats can get away with doing literally whatever they want to, even when they're not faithful to the text of the Constitution, but especially if they can just find some way to shoehorn it into the text, then, okay, well, that's constitutional, but, you know, Republicans hold themselves up and are held up to a much higher standard. This is how we lose.
Yeah, absolutely. Unilateral disarmament has another name. It's called suicide. And when you have one political party that will simply bend and break the rules at every opportunity, and another party that says, well, we won't hold you to that, and we're not going to punish you for that, but we will hold to those rules, then but what you're saying is basically you get to fight and we don't. Now, that doesn't mean that you disregard the importance of the Constitution, but understand that in Federalist 51, it was made clear by Hamilton that power should check power, or sorry, Madison, that power should check power, ambition should check ambition. If there is no cost for violating the constitutional order, if there is no cost for bending or breaking the rules, if you pay no price, then you will simply do it again. But the Republican strategy is you break and bend and do whatever you want, and we will never check your power. We will never check your ambition. That has got to change. You have to make it clear that, look, we will reciprocate. We want to adhere to the Constitution. We believe that to be the law of the land. We believe that to be the principle we want to hold to. But once you break it, we are going to turn around and make sure that you suffer the consequence of breaking it, that you get as good as you give. Anybody who's ever been in a playground school fight knows this. If you just let someone punch you and nothing happens to them and they don't get in trouble and they don't get hit back, they're just going to come back and punch you the next day. And Republicans are just the perpetual punching bag of the left.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the Republicans need to create the scenario where both sides can come to the table and say, OK, we actually have to agree on our rule of law and our highest form of law, because if Republicans are the only ones who are adhering to the spirit of the law and the Democrats are out there are advantageously using process however they prefer, then they're always going to have the edge up. And of course, you know, we're talking about things that are within the confines of legitimate process, just, you know, just ways that lawyers do this every day. They look at, you know, what are the best ways that we can use and manipulate the rules and process to our advantage. It's no different than playing a game of chess. You use the rules to your advantage so that you can win. That's the whole idea of strategy within the confines of the rules. But, you know, but even like looking, Orrin, at what were at the Senate recount race in Pennsylvania between, you know, McCormick and Casey. I mean, Mark Elias and other Democrats are out there, you know, trying to get illegal ballots counted. They're not going to suffer disbarment consequences. They're not going to suffer any sort of consequences for being election deniers and doing all of these things. They're out there doing everything that they suggested that Donald Trump couldn't do. And that's exactly the hypocrisy that I think the American people resoundingly rejected in 2024.
Yeah, I mean, even the blatant cheating got so bad that even Governor Shapiro eventually had to come out and say, actually, yeah, we might be on your team, but you can't just blatantly, you know, count illegal votes and pretend like that's okay. But you're right, they're not going to pay any cost, because let's be very clear, Democrats are more than happy to send their political opponents to jail. They have proven that, they have done that, they have weaponized the Department of Justice and our justice system in its totality, and they do not hesitate for a moment. But Republicans will not send people who are literally violating the law in real time and rather proudly, to jail. They simply will not do it. And so the left feels that they can get away with this, and certainly in Pennsylvania, where the government is ultimately on their side, they feel like they can continue to push this.
And they know that they can get away with it. Yeah, so Orrin McIntyre, we're already out of time. Really appreciate your comments, and we'll have to do a deeper dive on this topic and how, you know, we kind of wind all of this back, hopefully starting January 20th of 2025. But you can follow Orrin at The Blaze and also on X, and we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation itself? Much like the abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescue, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, the Trump transition is dominating all of the news and chatter in D.C. because over the last about 14 days since the election, Trump has made about that many appointments to his cabinet and key positions, including staffing. And of course, the left is melting down over all of this, as of course they're going to do, and that they are showing that they're going to continue the same playbook that they implemented in the first Trump term. And it is incumbent upon rational, reasonable people to stop that even before Trump takes office and just say, you know, let's quit with that kind of nonsense, because when it's the Biden administration that is putting up, you know, some of its highest level staff that are literally dudes in dresses, we can't take anything and any complaints that you say seriously. But one of the appointments that I'm the most excited about is FCC chairman nominee Brendan Carr, and he is vowing to go after big tech. He has outlined plans to remove regulations conservatives consider overbearing or outdated. He supports current efforts to ban TikTok in the United States, citing national security concerns, and he has also urged government to strip big tech companies like Alphabet and Meta platforms of existing legal protections for the content they host. This, among many other things, including his opposition to the very quickly pushed through Soros purchased radio networks. So it was about 200 radio stations that just kind of got the pass from the FCC that Soros, of course, hoped would influence the 2024 election. You know, joke's on him for spending that much money, because it really didn't. But let's bring on Abraham Hamilton III, one of our great friends here, and the American Family Association General Counsel and Public Policy Analyst, and of course, the host of the Hamilton Corner right here on American Family Radio Network at 5 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Eastern. So, Abe, this is one of those appointments that I think has the ability to really implement some change in how Washington does its business.
Oh, absolutely. You're so right about it. Brendan Carr is one of my favorite nominations that President Trump has made, because he's a current commissioner with the FCC. And to have the role of chairman on the FCC will be a sea change at the FCC. He is intimately familiar with the practices and procedures there. And he also, frankly, has a conservative worldview, and he has been acted upon that. You don't have to guess who Brendan Carr is and what he'll do in that position. He's already demonstrated his quality, and I think he would bring outsized value to the FCC as its chairman.
Absolutely. And I think that's an important function, you know, not just with the recent example that we saw with these the Soros purchase, but even, you know, a lot of these the ways that the government has been so not only out of control, but really clearly politically partial to leftists, whether they're Democrats or just actors with a leftist worldview or a, you know, non-originalist, non-Christian worldview. And that is really something that I think needs to change, not just from the FCC position, but across the board. And I'm hopeful with some of these picks from Trump, the mandate here and the overall message is we are going to shake up Washington, and it is not going to be the same after the next 4 years.
Now, I think that is clearly the message, and that is one that Brendan Carr will execute at the FCC. I think the announcement of Tom Homan with the responsibility of governing the deportation plans for illegal aliens is a serious communication. I think the bringing back Stephen Miller into the administration is also a further communication that the intentions here are very clear, that this is not business as usual. And I think that's wise. You know, if you recognize the trajectory the country has been on for the previous 20 some odd years, it's been the same trajectory. And the only interruption in that has been President Trump's 2016 administration. And so now, knowing this is his last term, it seems like he's endeavoring to hit the ground running with an effort to kind of put the initial foray into uprooting that deep state as what will be best for all of America.
And I'm so excited to have you this morning, Abraham Hamilton III, who is my special guest this morning, because we've talked a lot about worldview, and you and I on both of our programs emphasize that, not just because the American Family Association is specifically dedicated to promoting the biblical worldview, specifically in civil government, but also church government and family government, but because worldview ultimately matters. That's the lens by which we understand who we are as human beings made in the image of God and how we relate to each other and the basis upon which we have our moral values and principles. And it has to be objective. And as we're talking about all of this, one of the things that I think has been a key sort of component that's missing in the whole conversation is that we're talking about overall, you know, I think conservatives who are wildly excited about Trump, and they should be, they're talking about very specific mechanisms and changes to government that aren't necessarily bringing back grounded moral virtue. And and my producer, Luke, sent me this clip that I want to play for you, and I want to get your reaction to this this morning, because I thought it just evidenced really precisely how far we've come in the last 20 years, because if all we're doing is advocating for, you know, border control and to rein in reckless government spending and, you know, all of these other things that are very good, you know, term limits and destroy the deep state, all of those things are good, but that is not nearly far enough. And what we haven't done precisely as the GOP, and you know, whether people are conservatives and they're, you know, independents versus Republicans, whatever, as Christians, we have, in a sense, I think, Abe, really lost courage to stand up for traditional moral virtue. And this clip is from the Alan Keyes debate with then Barack Obama being elected president. So debated Obama for the U.S. Senate seat. This is from 2004. So 20 years ago, debating the definition of marriage. Listen to this.
Mr. Keyes, on the Channel 7 debate last Thursday night, you said, and I'm quoting you, where procreation is in principle impossible, marriage is irrelevant. You went on to say it was irrelevant and not needed. What about marriage between people who are well beyond their childbearing age? Irrelevant? Not needed?
No, simply a misunderstanding. The word in principle means relating to the definition of, not relating to particular circumstances. So if an apple has a worm in it, the worm is not part of the definition of the apple. It doesn't change what the apple is in principle. So the fact...
It retains its appleness.
It retains. To act as if concepts are laughable means that you want to be irrational. Human beings reason by means of concepts and definition. We also make laws by means of definitions. And if you don't know how to operate with respect for those definitions, you can't make the law. An individual who is impotent or another who is infertile does not change the definition of marriage in principle. because between a man and a woman, in principle, procreation is always possible. And it is that possibility which gave rise to the institution of marriage in the first place. As a matter of law, as a matter of law,
possible in principle.
But when it is impossible, as between two males or two females, you're talking about something that's not just incidentally impossible, it's impossible in principle. And that means that if you say that that's a marriage, you are saying marriage can be understood in principle apart from procreation. You have changed its definition in such a way as, in fact, to destroy the necessity for the institution. Since the only reason it has existed in human societies and civilizations was to regulate, from a social point of view, the obligations and responsibilities attendant upon procreation. So when you start playing games in this way, you are actually acting as if the institution has no basis independent of your own arbitrary whim.
So, Abe, my question is, can we get back to America being great without addressing the moral virtue?
In a short answer, no. I've said repeatedly on my program, a booming economy doesn't make a nation great. Reducing regulation doesn't make a nation great. Securing our border doesn't make a nation great. The definition for what would make a nation great comes right from our scripture. Proverbs 14:34, righteousness exalts a nation. I remember that debate just like it was yesterday. That was when then state Senator Barack Obama was campaigning to become U.S. Senator. If you could see the video of this, he's looking like he's literally in the class being educated, and seeing the reporters' efforts to mock Alan Keyes and to minimize what he's presenting just shows how the degradation of our mental capacity, frankly, and the willingness, because of the social rejection of God's standards for marriage, caused it to try to mock what Dr. Keyes was saying. But without the moral undergirding of this nation, our nation will not be great. You know, I've described what we've enjoyed as a reprieve from the trajectory our nation has been heading in. But make no mistake about it, a reprieve is just that, a short-lived stasis for God to allow us, the people of God primarily, to be active in proclaiming his truth and making disciples. Disciple-making fundamentally is appealing to the hearts and minds of the masses. And without articulating these enduring tent pegs of our constitutional Republican form of government, our nation is inevitably headed off of that cliff that George Washington and John Adams warned us about. Indispensable to our nation are religion and morality. This is biblical truth anchored by biblical morality conveyed in the word of God. In vain would a man claim the virtue of patriotism who would work to subvert either of them. There are lots of things that are good for our nation, but biblical morality is indispensable. And we will not be a great nation if we're willing to jettison biblical morality.
Absolutely. And this is where I want listeners to pause a moment in your enthusiasm and excitement, which you should have for the next 4 years, and realize that if we are going only toward some of these other priorities that are very good, like a closed border, like a good economy, like ensuring America first, all of these things, that's good, but we will never get to the actual fulfillment of what I believe really was the mandate of the American people for a total repudiation and rejection of everything that the left has to offer. If we don't go that step further, or maybe it's the foundation under, and get back to the root of what first made America great at its inception, which is exactly what this debate, I think, is evidencing. Before you ever got to a Trump versus Kamala worldview clash, Abe Hamilton, I mean, this in 2004, to see this worldview clash, I mean, imagine if Barack Obama had not won that, and if he hadn't gone on to usher in the LGBTQ agenda through his 8 years in office. I mean, over the last 20 years, but especially the last 50 years of American history, we have lost our moral grounding and our truth. And that is the one central focus that I really hope that the Trump administration, at least through some of the appointees like a Marco Rubio and others who are evangelical Christians, will bring to that administration.
It's 100% right. You know, it's amazing that that debate was taking place between Dr. Alan Keyes and Barack Obama, who at the time argued that he publicly wasn't in favor of same-sex marriage, but we now know he had sent personal letters to his girlfriend about fantasizing about, and I'm not trying to be salacious here, but fantasizing about intimate relationships with men. You know, we've learned all of this in the aftermath. And yet, with that debate, as the audience you heard with Dr. Keyes and Barack Obama, they were mocking Dr. Keyes and all of these kinds of things. And because they're trying to reduce the thing that he's communicating to say as if he's saying that people who cannot procreate are irrelevant for the concept of marriage, which is exactly not what he was saying. And they know that. But they want to go on to mock him and then look at where we've gone since then. If we truly want to be a great nation, the inevitable turn that has to occur is that a nation must turn in repentance before God. And it requires, as you said earlier in your question to me, one of the major ingredients is simple boldness. You know, for far too long, people who have a biblical worldview have been unwilling, and generally speaking, there are exceptions to this, but generally speaking, have been unwilling to contend for that worldview in public, have been unwilling to say, you know what, the reason why we understand that marriage is the one exclusive union between a man and a woman is because God authored marriage. And anything that derogates from what God has designed is not, in principle, to use Dr. Keyes's vernacular, is not a marriage. You know, to have the casual disregard for the attendant obligations between a husband and a wife and for the offspring that they produce in that union is a complete deviation from the entire scope of family law that we've had in this country up until very recently. We have to be willing to have these conversations. The reason why there's such a prevalent press for abortion and people don't like to talk about this is because we're largely a sexually immoral nation. You know, people point to, you know, rape and incest as exceptions, but those are red herrings. The statistics, not from my statistics, from places like the Guttmacher Institute, convey that that's less than 1% of the reality of what is taking place in our nation. The overwhelming reality is that we're murdering babies for convenience, which is the natural, inevitable product of physical intimacy between a man and a woman. You know, but if because we've been unwilling to have the broader worldview conversations anchored by the gospel, frankly, that we've devolved as a society to where we are. And if we truly want to be great, the inevitable thing that must take place is that we must return to the foundation established by God.
Absolutely. And we have to return to the objective truth that the definitions are God created, that we cannot redefine what he has ordained or established. Otherwise, as Dr. Key said, it's just the enforcement of the arbitrary whim of the collective judgment of man. And that's what we're seeing when we see the conservatives who want to sin up to a certain point, and it is sin if you go against God's plan, and we can say this here, even though a lot of conservatives will not, Abe, but they want their sexually immoral lifestyle. They want to say that gay marriage is okay, homosexual unions are okay, but then they want a complete rejection and repudiation of the trans agenda and the genital mutilation of children. And so they want to draw an arbitrary line at a place where God himself didn't put it, and they are having a very difficult time arguing for why the line should be at their arbitrary point instead of where God created it to be.
Yeah. The moment you move away from transcendent objective truth, you are by design focusing on subjective, humanistic boundary line articulation. And the argument then becomes, well, since we have collectively agreed to reject God's standards, then why should I embrace your standard instead of you embracing my standard? And that will be the inevitable fight. And the scripture articulates that this way. As it was in the days of Noah, when men did what was right in their own eyes. When you have various people with their various preferences and the transcendent objective truth and God's standards are rejected, we have opened the floodgates to anything else. And so then the argument becomes somewhat an humanistic intramural skirmish as to whose humanistic fallen standard will be best applied. And that is what will continue ad infinitum unless we return to God's transcendent objective standard.
Yeah, and this is how we get to these coexist bumper stickers and the whole notion of, well, you know, I personally wouldn't choose abortion, but who am I to say that that's not the valid choice for someone else? Or, you know, we get to all of these things. You have to do what's right in your own eyes and allow me to do what's right in my own eyes. And we cannot coexist, actually, as a society under those types of irrational values and completely arbitrary and different sets of principles, because our law just simply doesn't function that way. And we can't have a society and a cohesive society where everyone can simply just do whatever it is that they see is right versus wrong, because inevitably we will have clash. And then how can the government possibly mediate and arbitrate between those two opposing worldviews?
it's not possible. You know, and what if, you know, hypothetically, what if one man's worldview says, well, you don't have a right to exist? And the other says, well, yes, I do. Are we going to treat both of those worldviews as if they're equal? You know, we can't do that, you know, and that's why it was such a clunky response where you have, well, you know, Islam is a religion of peace, but we have terrorism and what we need to do. We should be able to rightly say, hey, there are people who are Muslim who are not trying to murder others. But there is a significant contingent that is prevalent today and has been consistent over time that are religiously committed to murdering anyone who's not Muslim. We need to be able to say that with clarity. And it highlights the fact that not all worldviews are the same.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that you joined me for this conversation, Abraham Hamilton III. Listen to the Hamilton Corner each and every weekday at 5 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Eastern for more of this great worldview content. And I just want to highlight and underscore for everyone listening, this is why biblical truth matters. And we need to be excited about some of the policies of the Trump administration, but never, ever forget that ultimately what we are advocating for is a return to morality, to normalcy, to rationality, and to living within the framework that God himself ordained. We're all out of time this morning. You can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.